The Bob Siegel Show is brought to you in part by Primetime Media Group and the law offices of Matthew Simone.
Recurring themes on The Bob Siegel Show can also be found on his online column, Forbidden Table Talk.
It's time now for the Bob Siegel Show, a religious open forum where all questions are welcome. And now, here's your host, Christian apologist, Bob Siegel.
And this is Bob Siegel. So, you'd like to believe in God, but doesn't the Bible paint a rather dire picture of the world's future, such as we've seen for so many years growing up in all these apocalyptic movies? Well, my friend, it all depends on which part of the Bible you're reading. Yeah, a lot of dreary things will happen in the future, but it all ends well after Jesus Christ returns. Still, I must admit, when we look at what's going on in our cities right now across the nation, it is easy to think of these apocalyptic movies, and almost every apocalyptic movie has something happening to New York City. Have you noticed that? New York City's destroyed or taken over by zombies, you name it. I especially, growing up, remember New York City being featured in all kinds of futuristic films. There's, just for a couple of examples, Planet of the Apes, the original one, where Charlton Heston discovers the Statue of Liberty buried in a beach because man had destroyed the world. The way our so-called republic is progressing, the Statue of Liberty might just as well be buried in the beach. And then Escape from New York. Who could forget that one? Oh, wait. That one's actually happening right now. Literally, all kinds of people are escaping, or at least trying to escape, from New York. Yes, it's time for our New York update.
Start spreading the news. I'm leaving today. I want to be a part of it. New York, New York, these vagabond shoes are longing to stray right through the very heart of it. New York, New York.
Well, New York Governor Andrew Cuomo seems to be having some trouble. This brilliant decision of his a while back to send COVID patients from hospitals into nursing homes, and this after Trump gave him a whole ship to use that he never used, this is finally being condemned even by fellow Democrats, especially since whistleblowers have come forth to talk about the numbers being even worse than originally reported and the governor trying to cover it up. Now, in all fairness, there is still reason to believe that Governor Cuomo is a good leader and an amazing leader. How do we know? He told us so himself in a book that he wrote praising his leadership. Well, that's good enough for me. But if you want a second witness, and it's good to get a second witness, don't forget the Emmy Award given to him for blathering hours on end every morning on TV about the crackerjack job he was doing keeping COVID from spreading. Of course, it's hard to think about blathering without leaving New York and heading for Washington. That's right. Now it's time for our Joe Biden update. I'm reading from Fox News. About three dozen House Democrats have signed a letter asking President Biden to renounce his sole authority to launch nuclear weapons, according to reports. A promise from the president to give up his nuclear capabilities as commander-in-chief could take the same power away from future presidents. All right, now, folks, this is a tough one for me. It's a tough one because when it comes to declaring a war or giving a signal for a bomb, the president should have sole authority. Then again, this is Joe Biden. I wouldn't trust him to feed a goldfish, let alone launch a nuclear weapon. Meanwhile, Vice President Kamala Harris is taking a crash course on foreign policy. Why, oh, why would she be doing that? I guess her course that she already took on marionette puppetry at the feet of Geppetto has concluded, and she's certainly doing her job with puppetry. Oh, how she's doing her job. A few days ago, at a press conference talking about vaccines, Biden said toward the end, "Stay socially distanced, and for God's sakes, wear a mask." Then, after leaving the podium, Kamala Harris gently reminded Uncle Joe that he was about to walk off without his mask, so he went back and got it. Kamala probably wishes Joe's mask was a muzzle. And now, let me introduce a man who should never be muzzled. Say hello to Jim Barrier.
Thank you, Bob, and if you'll just bear with me a moment, you're traveling through another dimension. It is a dimension of vast as space and timeless as infinity. It is the middle ground between light and shadow, between science and superstition, and it lies between the pit of man's fears and the summit of his knowledge. Next stop, the Twilight Zone. I just wanted to set you up, Bob, for what we're going.
Well, you know, I love the Twilight Zone. I never saw anything on that program more bizarre than what's actually happening today.
No, not me. It seemed pretty normal. But I wanted to bring that up. Twilight Zone was a great show. You know, Rod Serling got away with talking about issues that you couldn't talk about in those days on TV. So he disguised it as fantasy and sci-fi. And most of the episodes were oozing with irony, usually a punchline at the end that was like an uppercut. And that was what I liked about the show a lot. Did you have any favorite episodes, Bob? Name an episode that you remember.
Oh, boy. Well, there's the one where the aliens came to serve man, and everybody got all excited, and they meant that they came to serve man to themselves and eat man. There's the one where Billy Mummy, who later in Lost in Space fame, wished people to the cornfield. That was kind of creepy, the idea of some snot-nosed, spoiled little brat having the ability to just vaporize you and nobody could
disappoint him. He was in a couple of pretty crazy stuff.
Yeah.
Well, I want to tell you about one of my favorite ones. The title of it was The Invaders. And the story starts off, there's this old woman in a cabin. She doesn't talk, but she's there, and a flying saucer lands, and these little extraterrestrials are wandering through her house. And in the end, the punchline is that it's actually an alien planet, and the little invaders are from the Earth.
Oh, yeah, he did have those kinds of twists a lot, didn't he?
Yeah, and that kind of sets up the topic that I wanted to address this evening on the show, and that is that we are, much like those characters in that show, if we're not careful, we think that this Earth is our home. But the truth is, we are aliens and visitors and sojourners. And as the great Larry Norman once said, I'm only visiting this planet. The Earth is not our home. And I'm afraid what happens too often with church people, with Christians, we get so attached and so used to this world, this world order, this world its system and its values and the way things operate, the economy of this world, and we forget that we're actually citizens of another world. So I just wanted to talk about that a little bit tonight and see how you feel about that.
These days, I think we're reminded more of that. That's the attitude we're always supposed to have as Christians. There's nothing wrong with enjoying this life, loving America, loving your country, being involved in the culture. But we are supposed to keep in mind that our home is of another world. And these days, with our freedoms being systematically taken away from us, I think a lot more Christians are going to be reminded of that in the near future.
And maybe hoping that they can escape this world soon, like Escape from New York City.
Yeah, the new movie, Escape from Planet of the Apes, Escape from the Earth, Notice how I mentioned the good Planet of the Apes and not that stupid remake that they made a while back with Mark Wahlberg.
You know, I really, I liked the very first one. And again, because it was a shock at the end, like you mentioned the Statue of Liberty on the beach there and everything. But
hey, piece of trivia. Charlton Heston only agreed to do the first sequel Beneath the Planet of the Apes if they killed off his character and made it impossible to do any more sequels. So they used another nuclear weapon to annihilate the entire Earth so that not only could Heston not return, no character return, and then they made a third one anyway called Escape from the Planet of the Apes, where supposedly a couple of apes got off the world before it was destroyed and went back through time to the world in the 20th century. All to say, nobody dies in science fiction, not if the producers want to make a sequel.
Well, you always need to leave it open for a sequel. And I guess that's another good analogy about our life here. There is a sequel to this existence and this realm that we're trapped in. Now, Jesus said to his disciples in John 15, "You are not of the world, but I chose you out of the world." And then in his high priestly prayer in John 17, he's praying for the disciples, and he prays to his Father, "I'm not asking you to take them out of the world, but to keep them away from the evil one. They are not of the world, just as I am not of the world." And then ultimately before Pilate, when he was discussing whether he was a king or not, and he said, he admitted he was a king, but he said, "My kingdom is not of this world."
Okay, and Jim, when we come back from our break, I'm going to ask you to define what that means, because some people think that means we should be going off and living in some monastery or something, but it doesn't mean that we're not going to be in the world, and it's there embedded in the words. You will be in the world, but not of the world. So what does that mean to not be of the world? We'll explore that when we return to the Bob Siegel Show.
Believe it or not, Bob Siegel is aware that there may be one or two people who disagree with his opinions. To offer your own comments on the topic at hand, or to challenge Bob with a thought-provoking question, feel free to contact Bob on Facebook, Twitter, or questions@bobsiegel.net.
When you trust the care of your children to others, it's comforting to know they share the same Christian values, that what you teach your children at home is also taught in their preschool environment. Wisdom Works Christian Preschool is an all-inclusive preschool where the staff ministers to all children of all abilities, including children with special needs, through a curriculum developed by the owners and designed for the preschool-aged child 3 to 5. During these preschool years, your children will make important developmental gains, as well as social and emotional development that'll be the foundation for their overall success in life. Wisdom Works Christian Preschool is a state-licensed, Bible-believing, Bible-teaching preschool. Contact us now at WisdomWorksChristianPreschool.com and secure a space for your preschooler. WisdomWorksChristianPreschool.com or call 619-440-1044. 619-440-1044. Wisdom Works Christian Preschool.
Thank you. Welcome back to 1170 AM, 96.1 FM, The Answer. I'm your host, Bob Siegel. Always good to be joined by Jim Barry. Jim, during the break, Brendan and I were talking about other favorite episodes of The Twilight Zone, and I forgot about one that he reminded me of. Remember Talking Tina, the one with Telly Savalas, the talking doll, and she goes, "My name is Talking Tina, and I'm going to kill you."
Oh, there were some great ones.
We were thinking, we need to dedicate a whole show to Twilight Zone. You, me, and Brendan. What do you think?
Oh yeah. Well, cue up that music and get it ready.
Well, and actually, every one of their episodes were so profound. We could probably find some Christian analogy just to legitimize the show for the audience. When all we really want to do is talk about the Twilight. No, actually, very profound. Like you said, ahead of its time. However, we were talking about being in the world but not of the world. There's an old saying that Christians are sometimes so heavenly minded they're no earthly good, and you're not talking about that. And I know you're not like that. You're a down-to-earth guy. You have a sense of humor. You love talking about music and sports. You're not the kind of person, even though you've been a pastor for many years, who can only talk about the Bible. But still, you take it very seriously that your home is of another world. What does that mean to you?
Okay. And what we have to do is understand, first of all, what that word world is. It's cosmos that's used most of the time in the New Testament.
We're trying to take us back to the Twilight Zone again, huh, Jim? Cosmos?
But it's not talking about Earth, the materials, but it's talking about the world system.
Yes, the philosophy of the world.
Yes, and that's what we're not, because Jesus said, "They are not of the world just as I am not of the world," but Jesus walked on the earth. He was on the planet when he said that. So he wasn't talking about just departing with the mothership or whatever people think is going to come back and save them. He was talking about two systems. Now, just so we can get out there a little bit, I'm going to tell you, you know, and I love a lot science fiction and fantasy. Obviously, we started this show with this, and there's a lot of great stories out there that have that are parables, they're analogies. And one of the popular themes in sci-fi is that of parallel universes or parallel worlds. And so I think that there is a parallel world, if you will, where the angels are and where heaven is. You know, in the first line in the Bible, it's kind of interesting. It says, "In the beginning, God created the heavens," plural, "and the earth." And so there are different realms that we are very unfamiliar with, and the scripture doesn't give us a whole lot of insight. It really doesn't tell us a lot about what heaven will be like or what we will be like when we ultimately go to heaven. But the reality
talks a lot about how to get to heaven, how to get there, but not a whole lot about what it's going to be like when we get there.
Yeah, yeah. In fact, John says we don't know what we'll be like, but we know we'll be like him, which is kind of exciting. So I believe that there's an invisible realm that's very real. I believe that there is spiritual warfare taking place. Like I really love the books by Frank Peretti. I don't know if you read any of those.
I read the first one, "This Present Darkness."
Yeah, yeah. And I thought it was a novel. You know, it was fiction, but I thought it gave a great suggestion of what things might be like in those realms. So when we say we're not of this world, when Jesus said, "I'm not of this world and I have chosen you out of this world," he's talking about a world system. The reality is we're still walking on the planet for now. And we do that for a period of time. I'm turning 70 this year, Bob.
Wow. Well, I'm right behind you. I'm a few years, but it won't be long for me either.
So I've had, you know, a pretty good run. I would like to stick around for a while if Jesus doesn't return. And by the way, folks, I believe he is going to return, but I don't think anybody knows when that is. And I don't.
Well, if you're turning 70 soon, he's returning for you soon, one way or the other.
yeah, that's right.
Well, no, that's right. Actually, so, all kidding put aside, that's true for all of us. None of us know what day we're going to go, no matter how old we are. And in our lifetime, he is going to return for us because we're going to die and then get resurrected into heaven. However, there is also a time he's going to return to the entire world.
I believe that. But for now, we are in the world, but not of the world. And that's what he said. They are in the world, but not of the world. And Jesus said, just as I am not of the world. And so that I think in the big picture, that means that we are not part of the world system. I don't buy into the economics of this world, that there's only the material. I don't buy into the me first and I'll get what I can what I get. You know, it's a different economy. It's a different vision. It's a different purpose. And it's a realization that we have another home. In Philippians, Paul says, our citizenship is in heaven. Peter says, I urge you as foreigners and strangers. So there, it's a consistent theme that we should not get so comfortable here or so married to the things of this life and this world. Personally, I've enjoyed my life. I think I've been the most blessed person. I'm so grateful for everything God's done and everything he's given me. And I've had some great experiences. But if it's just this little short visit, you know, and James says, your life is a vapor. If it's just this brief time, whether I get 70 years or if I get 80 or 90, what if I live to be 100? Maybe then I could go on TV. That's a brief time compared to eternity.
Yeah, so, I've been thinking about that lately. I'm praying to God. I go as in this twilight, not trying to use that word again for that reason. I've literally made this prayer. In this twilight part of my life, I'm thinking of all the people I've shared Christ with when I was a national evangelist across the country. And all of us, we share Christ in our everyday lives and places. And I'd be saying in this twilight part of my life, and then I think, well, you know, I could live to be 90 to 100 years old, but every year goes by so much more quickly. When you look at how long you seemed to be alive when you were 10, and then compare that with how quickly the years went by when you were 20, 20 to 30 was like a flash. And every year, we're just more aware of how short our time is. So honestly, it doesn't matter how long we're going to live. It's going to be short, but that's the good news is that's just in this life. And as you put it, as James put it, this is a brief period of time, but it's preparing us for all of eternity where there'll be no more time.
And case in point about that, tomorrow marks the 1-year anniversary of my retirement.
I remember you announced your retirement, and then the whole country was shut down, and we all had to retire.
Exactly.
Thanks a lot, Jim.
And so throw me under the bus, everybody. It was my fault.
You got kind of a bum deal because you probably had all kinds of travel plans for your retirement. You weren't able to do any of them.
It was yes and no. On the one hand, I was planning on having a lot of time and doing nothing and getting paid to do nothing, which is getting paid nothing. And so I was ready for that.
Now, Jim, if you want to get paid to do nothing, you have to move to Washington and become a senator or even a president.
but you know, I was ready for everything. So when COVID happened, it didn't impact me. You know, the dinner we were doing down there, serving 100 people, homeless people, every Wednesday night, they would have shut that down in a heartbeat. I couldn't have done that. And even churches all started meeting online and everything. So actually, my timing was really, really good, even though I wasn't so clever to plan it that way. I was just fortunate that I made the decision when I did. And actually, I gave the church a year's notice. I told them when I was going to retire. And so it was not some mystical thing. My daughter called me right after and said, Dad, did God tell you that this was going to happen? I said, no, I've been trying to follow that still small voice. And I believe he wanted me to retire, but I had no idea everything was going to shut down.
Well, that was good of you to give the church a year's notice to prepare. Now I'm going to give you about a minute's notice before our next break. You're listening, everybody, to The Bob Siegel Show. Bob Siegel. They say a man's home is his castle. So when it comes to the wiring of your house, you don't want to mess around with some unknown electrician. Instead, do what I did. Call W&S Electric Incorporated. W&S specializes in both contracting and repair. From troubleshooting to remodeling to circuit breakers and fuses, W&S takes a skilled but personal interest in your home at affordable rates. I know the owner, Wayne Klingenhofer, personally, and I can testify firsthand to his integrity. Call 619-447-8785. That's 447-8785 for W&S Electric, Incorporated. License number 480-539, W&S Electric.
Listen to this customer review of Bob Siegel's novel, Choice of the Lorelei. I saw this play on which the story is based many years ago. Elements of it have stayed with me over the years as it expanded my imagination about how things might have been in ancient times. It was also very exciting to see this story intersecting with the other works by the author. Very different stories, yet linked by a common element. I can hardly wait for more. Choice of the Lorelei, available in ebook or print copies from Amazon.com or BarnesandNoble.com.
Welcome back to the Bob Siegel Show, our theme, Christianity and its relationship to politics and pop culture. I'm joined today with Jim Barrier, and it's time for our Jim Barrier segment.
Uh-oh.
Stump Jim Barrier. What do you got for us today, Brendan? Any clues, any hints, or are you just going to play the music?
I'll give you a clue of the year. We're going to 1968 on this one.
No, boy.
Okay.
that was a year where just about everything happened. And a lot that of versatility in rock and roll.
Crazy.
So that doesn't narrow it down too much,
crazy
but somewhat.
Year.
Yeah. All right, go ahead.
Yeah.
Blowing in the Wind. Peter, Paul, and Mary version.
That was way too easy.
Wow. Bob, you're killing me. You're beating me every single time.
You know, I was telling Brendan before we started the show that we should become like the socialists and let you win once in a while just to be fair and equal.
Yeah, I know. Well,
but I'm not used to this, Jim. You're usually the one that rubs my nose in it. Oh well.
Jim, can you name the original artist?
I can name the original artist. It was Bob Dylan.
Yeah, that's correct again.
But in the Bob Dylan version, it was how many years does a mountain exist before it is washed? I like the way Peter, Paul, and Mary sing it better. Go ahead, Jim. Give us some trivia about the song that you probably know and I don't.
Yeah, it was written by Bob Dylan, and Peter, Paul, and Mary had a popular version with it. But one of my favorite versions was by Stevie Wonder.
I don't think I ever heard the Stevie Wonder version.
I'm going to look that up, too.
Brendan's going to look that up.
Really? Okay. Yeah, he did a great version of that. So, yeah, great song. And it was kind of a lament about the troubles in the world. I remember the first big charity concert was put on by George Harrison of the Beatles for Bangladesh to raise money for all the starving people over there. And he and Bob Dylan were good friends. And Bob came out and surprised the crowd. And he sang that song. And I remember watching it. And I felt like he was saying, like I said a few years ago. Great song.
He was a brilliant, brilliant composer, brilliant lyricist, brilliant poet. I just thought that when he actually sang his own songs, but again, it had a character and a style and a uniqueness, and it was the 60s, so who would remember it anyway? Because it was the 60s.
Yeah, and he was not a great singer or even really a great guitar player, or he prided himself on his harmonica, but now, I will say this about Bob Dylan. I have a playlist in my phone that has 182 songs, separate songs, individual titles, all written by Bob Dylan, but recorded by other artists.
Oh, my, thank you. See, now it sounds like something I wouldn't mind getting. I was thinking if I had to listen to Bob Dylan sing 180 songs, that would be like hell on earth, speaking of being of another world.
Everybody does his songs better than he did.
Yeah. Peter, Paul, and Mary, I love their version, but we have to give the credit to Dylan because he was the one that composed it.
And the lyrics
were spot on.
Yeah. Yeah, it was a great song. So, boy, that was sure a departure. I'm ready for more Twilight Zone.
we'd like to give you this chance to show your music stuff. And you know so much more music than me. And honestly, I'm not getting into cahoots with Brendan. He has no idea. But I've got to say, I've been lucky. I've been lucky these last. Well, no, I'm a Christian. I've been blessed. Yeah. I'm sure it's very important to God and the cosmos which one of us wins this game. I've been blessed to have beaten you.
Well, you know, there is something that is spiritual about music, not just the hymns and the Christian songs, but there is something about music when an artist writes a song, performs a song, records it, then that song is with us even after they pass away. And because I'm at the age I am, most of the artists that I really loved growing up listening to, so many of them are passing away, but I still can listen to their music, and so a part of them stays with me. So that's my commentary about music, and I'm talking about pop music, not just the spiritual Christian songs. I listen to a lot of types of music.
And also they call music the universal language. It is interesting when you try to analyze music. If I hear, and let's just say it's all instrumental, no lyrics. If I hear Irish music, I know it's Irish. And yet if I sit there and I think, okay, what's making it Irish? Well, we can talk about certain kinds of beats and certain kinds of instruments. But when you hear Western music for a Western, even if it's a movie or TV show you've never seen before, you know it's for a Western. Yeah. When you hear something melancholy, it puts you in a melancholy mood. It's really, and you can see whatever language we're speaking. That's why getting back again to the science fiction in Close Encounters of the Third Kind, I thought it was interesting that when the aliens came to our planet, they communicated through music.
Yeah, exactly. And I think it would be very, very hard to find a people group or a tribe or any isolated situation where there wasn't some form of music. Now, it might not sound like the music that we listen to. I have a missionary friend. It's a guy I've been friends with for over 40 years, Ron Kruger, and he and his wife have been missionaries now for a long, long time. And one of the cool things they do, they go into these remote areas and they get to know the people. And it's similar to the Wycliffe Bible translators, where they learn the language and stuff, but they have taken it up a notch. They learn the music of that culture, and they learn the scales, which are very, very different from our Western scales often. And the instruments that they play are very strange sounding, and maybe the tonal incantations that they use when they sing. And they, when they have converts that come to know Jesus, they teach them how to write worship music and hymns in their own language and their own culture with their own instruments and their own style. And it's one of the coolest things that I've ever seen a missionary do.
Well, I'm glad they do that instead of playing them a Bob Dylan song on the CD, because they could start a war with those people.
Or giving them the little hymnals of praise and saying, okay, now sing Amazing Grace.
Actually, Amazing Grace is one of the hymns that I actually do like, but I have to say I don't have a lot of use for most of them. Although a lot of them are very well done in the lyrics, but some of them sound like they come out of a roller rink in the 1800s, and I am glad that the church
were written hundreds of years ago.
These days, now that the baby boomers are the old fogies, where most contemporary churches have rock bands or the guitar or something. But I remember in the 70s, half the churches you went to, they're still playing the organ and singing the old hymns.
Yeah, not anymore. But now you got to have drums and lights and smoke or fog.
Yeah, and I'm not of the opinion that we always have to be really flashy either. But I do believe we should be seeker-friendly, not to the point where we're compromising the message, which some churches are doing, but seeker-friendly enough so that people could come in and it's a style of music they relate to. Because, again, you get back to this idea of, okay, are Christians these people that have to be on this higher plane and we can't relate to them? they can relate to the music, even the style of the music, if they don't get the Christian lyrics. It's a starting point. It's commonality.
When I first became a Christian, it was at Skyline Church, and we had a band, and they played electric guitars and had drums, and it freaked the old people out, you know, because we were taking the style of music that teenagers of that day listened to and liked, but it was a tool. And then of course, you know, I mentioned Larry Norman earlier, and there was and then Chuck Smith and the movement up in Orange County with Maranatha music and everything, and they started playing what they called contemporary Christian music. It was just Christian rock and roll, but they were taking the style of the day and putting Christian lyrics to it, and that was great. And they're still doing that today. The problem is, I don't care too much for the style of the music today, so I'm lost again. Now,
well, yeah, when rock first came out, a lot of Christians were calling it the devil's music.
The first time an organ was used in a church service, the people said it was the devil's box. They called the organ devil's box.
Yeah.
So.
No, I don't care for organ music. I'm of the generation that didn't grow up on it, but heard it in a lot of churches when I got saved in the 70s. But I'm not going to call it the devil's music just because I don't care for it.
But that's typically what people do. If it's something you don't like, then
if they don't like it, it comes from the Spirit of God, because obviously the way they feel and the way God feels must be the same way.
Yeah, I try to be a little more open-minded than that. Boy, we just jumped off here. We did jump into another world.
We did. That's just the nature of our rapport on the radio, Jim. I'm sure the audience expects no less from us. Or no more than us.
Yeah. I was going to go back. Boy, we've killed a half hour here. The other part of my retiring was, you nailed it, my wife had a year's worth of travel plans. Those are all still on the shelf because, frankly, we can't travel very many places, certainly not overseas.
Well, you can travel to Walmart and go shopping with a mask and 6 feet social distancing. I'm sure you were looking forward to that for years for your retirement.
Walmart, where the aliens exist. And
I saw a picture on Facebook the other day. It was so hilarious. It showed the first photos from Mars, and it showed the Mars terrain, and there was already a Walmart that had been built in the background.
Yeah, exactly. They've done that with Walmart, McDonald's, and Starbucks. I could take a whole night and just talk about it.
Well, I can tell you this, Jim, if they ever do open those up on Mars, we're going to have to still wear a mask when we go up there, even up on Mars.
Well, yeah, you're going to need more than a mask, but I love space travel. I love the space program. I love when they landed on the moon. That was a big thing. I remember John Kennedy saying, we're going to send a man to the moon and bring him back. And people thought he was nuts. And so I've liked the space race and all that. And I think it's because it's something that is, there's something in mankind that we are compelled to go and explore. I think it goes all the way back to the first people in Genesis, Adam and Eve. And God told Adam to subdue the earth. And I think he put something in him that wanted to find out more and learn and travel. So we are compelled as human beings to go beyond and see what's out there, you know, to go boldly where no one has gone before. They had to change it from no man to no one. But I think there's something that's part of the human condition where we want to find out, we want to learn, we want to grow. And so I think the space race really came out of all that, even though there was the whole industrial military complex and all of that. And it was about whoever's going to control space. That's the line in that movie, The Right Stuff. You know, Rome controls
the world. That was a great movie, by the way. Haven't they made a miniseries out of The Right Stuff? Or they're talking about making a miniseries out of it? One or the other.
Yeah, I don't know.
But it was a wonderful movie. If you have not seen that movie, folks, go out and rent it or get it off Netflix or whatever.
But that's what he's saying. You know, Rome controlled the roads, so they controlled the world. Britain controlled the seas, so they controlled the world. And in this generation, whoever controls space is going to control the world. And they're probably
controls the grid or the internet, if you ask me, but we'll see.
I think it's more, it's the money. Remember the movie Rollerball?
I remember that movie, but I remember when it came out. I don't believe I've ever seen it, however.
It was in the 70s. Well, the subtle thing in there, what set the whole thing up was they referred to the corporate wars. It was not, it was dystopian, but it was not as a result of so much the nuclear holocaust, but it was corporate takeovers, and the world had now been kind of compartmentalized by money and corporate business. There was one with Sly Stallone, but it was the same kind of thing. It was the commercialism had taken over, and everything was based on corporate movement and commercial entities and all of that. So I think we're more headed to something like that, where it's going to be controlled. And I think you're right, the internet and the whole cyber thing, that's what we see going on right now. I think one of the things they're most concerned about with China is a cyber attack.
Exactly. So, and then, of course, in the name of fighting commercialism, these movies are commercial successes sometimes and make money. And speaking of commercials, we will be right back. Hold on there, Jim.
Reader enthusiasm for the dangerous Christmas ornament doesn't end. Check out this customer review from Amazon.com. Anytime I read a book where I want to find out what happens in the next chapter all the way to the last page of the book is a great book. This is the experience you and your children will have reading The Dangerous Christmas Ornament. I read the whole thing in a short time despite a busy schedule. The interesting plot lines has the flavor of realism because the author is writing from his own childhood experiences and ours as well. You will relate to the authentic family dynamics and the playground trials and triumphs described in the book. The book will also make you laugh as some of the characters have a great sense of humor, delivering good-natured jokes mixed with a dose of sarcasm. Most importantly, the book throughout has a moral dimension to it that takes it to a deeper level, making it a preferred selection to read to your kids. Enjoy The Dangerous Christmas Ornament, available in bookstores and libraries.
Welcome back to 1170 AM and 96.1 FM, The Answer. Jim, so Brendan did some quick research, and there is a miniseries based on The Right Stuff put out by National Geographic, but not a documentary, apparently, with actors.
Right,
and so that could be interesting, should be interesting, but I still love the movie. I can't imagine it being more entertaining than the movie was.
Okay, so let me just see if I can wrap up a few things here. How can we be in the world but not be of the world? So I have a few tips for everybody that I really believe in, and I think they could be help. And this is review for many people, but they're just principles that we would do well to incorporate in our life. The first thing is to live as if God exists. I heard Madeleine Murray O'Hare one time, someone said, what is an atheist? She said, an atheist is someone who lives as if there is no God, which means that churches are full of atheists. I don't know. But we need to live as if he really exists. Like we believe he exists. We need to live.
Well, the irony is that atheists actually do live as if he exists, not in the sense of going to church or worshiping him, but in the sense of living as though there's purpose, meaning, right, wrong. Madeleine Murray O'Hare's biggest problem with the Bible is she called it an evil book, which it's not. But the point is, for her to even be concerned about good and evil betrays that she does believe she's not in a universe of randomness and chance.
I always thought it was kind of strange to devote your life to prove something doesn't exist. that you, you know, if it doesn't exist, why are you even bothering?
Yeah, well, there's usually an emotional reason or a bad experience in church. For all their talks about intellectual arguments, they're very emotional reasons a lot of atheists.
It's really, I don't want to change the way I'm living. But so that's the first thing. Live as if God really exists. Second, live as if there really is eternity and a heaven, and that there is something beyond this short existence. Live as though I am really forgiven. I can't tell you how much time I've spent with people, praying with people, counseling people, because they stay in guilt and shame, and they don't move on. They if you ask them, has Jesus forgiven you? Did Jesus die for your sins and God has forgiven you? They said, oh, yes, but they will stay trapped in that bondage to guilt and shame. Live as though you really believe that God has forgiven you. That may be the most important thing I'm going to say here on this list, but that is a biggie. Live like God actually hears your prayers and will answer your prayers. Sometimes we will pray, we'll say a quick prayer, we'll say something, we're not even sure that we mean it or believe it. People need to believe that God is listening. He is listening. And he does respond. Francis Schaeffer said, he wrote a book called The God Who Is There, and then the next one was, He is there and he is not silent. In other words, he's involved, he's active, and he does hear your prayers, and he does answer your prayers. He may not answer them the way you want him to, but he will answer your prayers. And then the next thing is to live aware and conscious of the reality that people need Jesus Christ. Man, we walk past people every day. And these are people that are hurting. These are people who have a soul, and they have an eternal destiny that hasn't been set yet, by the way. Bob, I think you agree with me. I don't think that everything is wound up like some clock that God can't do anything about. I think people have a choice. And we need to live like people are out there, and they need to know about Jesus. And so you don't have to be an evangelist. You don't have to be a gifted preacher, but you can be a catalyst in someone's life. You can have an impact on someone's life. You can show them Jesus just by your kindness and your actions, and you can be ready to answer and never be afraid. Now, see, it's intimidating for some people because you're an apologist, and I've heard you speak it, and you're really well-versed, and you can debate atheists, and you're good at that. Not everybody can do that, but you know what you can say, people? You can say, you know, I don't know the answer to your question, but I'll sure try to find out, and let me pray with you right now and ask for an answer to your question. Everyone can have an impact on other people.
And that's a good thing to bring up, Jim, because when we're telling people, live as though God exists, live as though there's an eternity. Ladies and gentlemen, if you're listening and you're not a Bible believer, we don't mean that we're just assuming that and believing what we want to believe. Jim and I live that way, not just Jim and I, anybody who has entered a relationship with Christ lives that way because they have entered a relationship with God through Christ. And that's a very real relationship. It's very tangible.
Yeah, yeah.
And so we're not talking about any kind of blind faith or really any kind of faith at all for that matter. We're talking about facts. This is not a show where we're going through those facts, but just so you know, we're not saying, well, just live as though there is a God, even though you have no idea. No, God does make himself known. He'll make himself known to you too, if you're seeking him.
Yes. So your choices, your decisions, your actions make a difference. They not only make a difference in your life, but in all of the people around you. And it doesn't mean you are perfect. I don't know anybody that's perfect other than Jesus Christ himself. It doesn't mean that you have all the answers or that you're never going to fail, but you can have an impact. And I think that the final thing on this list of how should we live in the world but not of the world is to live like Jesus really is going to come back someday. Now, as you said it very well, he may not come back in my lifetime, but he will come back for me. Even
He'll come
if he
back for you in your
come.
Lifetime, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Now, there is a time, I believe it. I believe that there's a time when he will physically return to this planet, and a lot of things are going to change when that happens. I don't know when that's going to be. I don't know that that will happen in my lifetime. You know, when I first became a believer, and I was there at Skyline Church that we mention on the show a lot, where you teach a class, you know, I was 16 years old, and they were pretty heavy on the end times and Jesus is coming back and everything. And I remember being a 16-year-old and thinking, oh, I'm not going to live long enough to ever even be married. I'm not even going to know what that's like, because Jesus might come back tonight. And that's not a terrible thing. But the truth is, that was 52 years ago. And if I'd have just sat around waiting for Jesus to come back, I would have wasted a half a century.
Yeah, the best combination, I think, Jim, is to be wise enough to plan your life as though you're going to be here your whole life, but have the attitude about the world and the philosophy of the world to not become so attached that you forget that Jesus could come back for you at any time. I think that's where the balance is.
And that's a great way to wrap up, I think, what I really wanted to talk about today. Now, we went all over the place, and we do that sometimes, you know.
But you went back to the place we needed to go back to. That's the important thing.
Yeah.
All right. Well, Jim, it's always great having you on. Yeah. We'll have you on again very, very soon, and I will see you next week, everybody, on The Bob Siegel Show.
The Bob Siegel Show, sponsored by Bob Siegel.